This is Biz. I'm a stay-at-home mom with a toddler son and a daughter who's a full-blown kid.
And I'm Teresa, a part-time working mom with two little boys.
This is a show about life after giving life. Don't listen with your kids, because there will be swears. This is One Bad Mother. This week on One Bad Mother, we talk about kids sharing a room. It's like a sleepover, but with more fights. Plus, Biz has a vegetarian in the house, Teresa has a whiner in the house, and we talk to the recommendations librarian from the New York City Public Library and co-host of the podcast The Librarian Is In, Gwen Glazer.
Woo!
I just sometimes right after the woo think about all the people we lost over the woo.
I know.
And I say, good day to you. This should be our judgment bar across the board for all things women. Are you a one bad mother or are you not? Well, can you tolerate a woo at the top of your if you can't tolerate woos in your life, that's okay. That's cool.
Move on. Scroll on.
Scroll on is what they say these days. How are you, Teresa?
It's Monday, guys, and I'm glad that the weekend is over because I really needed a break from my children. Oh my God.
It's like opposite day in how people treat weekends.
Seriously. Yeah. Actually, Simon was no big deal this weekend, but Oscar is going through something. Mm. I don't know what. He's 2 and 9 months. I'm realizing he's about to turn 3 in 3 months, which is crazy.
Yeah.
He's developing a lot right now. We're at like some stuff is going on.
Some development is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's happening the most is that everything is coming out in that high pitched whine sound that is like, the worst is like, we're just around the house, like doing things. I'm in the same room as him.
Yeah.
And instead of like asking me for something, he'll be like, Mama.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That. And I'm like, what? And it puts me on the defense.
Yeah.
Even though there's no, like, even though he's just calling my name, but I'm like, what? I'm like, what?
I'm pointing at Teresa, like, vigorously being like, yes, I know.
Because
this is exactly what's happening in our house.
Because the thing is, he doesn't have to call out for me at all.
Right.
He can just go right in to whatever it is that he needs, but he doesn't. It has to be preceded with, Mama, Mommy, whatever, something. And I'm like, go ahead. Go right ahead. You have my attention. Like,
I know.
What the? And so, but then, so everything is high pitched. So, and I will say, I'll give myself some credit. I have been staying calm as much as possible. And a lot of times when he's giving me that, I'll just very calmly say, you know how to ask for that in a nice way. You can ask for that in your nice Oscar voice. I don't want to hear about it in a whining voice.
Right.
I want to hear about it in your regular Oscar voice.
Yeah.
And he will turn it around and do it. But then 10 seconds later, it's right back to square one. I mean, it's just, it's constant.
It is.
It's making me crazy.
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
Because I think that is what is contributing to me being on like a constant person edge right now. I am barely functioning because so much of the day is that Mama.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's just like sitting on the couch. He doesn't need anything.
Yeah.
He just like shoots out this like whiny Mama. And I'm like, I'm right. And it's that you're right. You immediately jump to the, I'm right here. What is it that you want?
Which is like awful. It's just like an awful way to be.
It's like, Ellis, can you use your Ellis voice? And Mama will try and use her Mama voice.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I'm sorry. It's awful.
Thank you for validating that.
No, that's about all I got.
Yeah.
Validation.
Yeah.
That is what you're going through. It's an experience that is happening in the world. That is normal. You are not alone.
Okay.
I rarely think that maybe as comforting as we hope it is.
No, it actually is comforting right now. Thank
worst.
You. How are you?
Well, I am equally on the edge.
Okay.
Summer, guys, I'm not doing well. The children, I got, Ellis is in that same sort of sweet wine spot. He also, we've really been struggling with food. He really has just shifted into like super picky. I wouldn't even say picky. He just won't fucking eat anything. Uh-huh.
He's like not hungry.
Yeah, he's just either not hungry or he wants like garbage, you know, chips. I mean, this kid gets like chips like once a week, like and if we're having chips, you know, it's not like it's a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've done the whole like, here's some little snack cups that you can reach and they all have different things in it that I can tolerate you eating any time of day.
He eats the one with chips.
Right.
And that's
so I don't put the chip in it. Luckily, I don't put the chips, but there's always like one that I'm like, I guess technically I'm okay with the snack until it's all he wants to eat.
Yeah.
And so like, that's just...
It's the thing that would be fine if he was eating all the other stuff.
All the other stuff. Right. I mean, this kid used to eat like the watermelon and the melons and fruits. And none of it.
Oh my God.
None of it.
Oh no.
And so I accept the universal, it's okay.
Nice.
And like, I know that like this will not be forever.
Yeah.
And I know that like, whatever. I understand that it's developmental and fuckity fuck fuck. Like, whatever. But it makes me so angry when everything else is going on in my life.
Yeah.
And I just like want him to eat, right? And then on like Friday, Katie Bell walks in and announces, she's a vegetarian. And I would like to say, that is great. I am like, so the two things existing in my world at the moment are, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I will support you.
Uh-huh.
That is great.
Uh-huh.
I will even limit all of my, even bacon, even these kind of like jerk questions, right? That you wouldn't ask like a grown up. You wouldn't be like, oh, you're vegetarian.
Yeah.
But what about bacon?
Yeah.
But what about chicken? What about chicken nuggets? Chicken nuggets? What about chicken noodle soup? Because there's chicken. And then I was like, shut up, Elizabeth, because she might still eat chicken noodle soup.
Yeah.
Like, right?
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that. But like, I actually just started crying because I just don't have anything to feed her because she's not going to eat beans. She's not going to eat. I mean, like we already talked about, I was like, Katie Bell, you understand that like, and I said this again really nicely. I was like, Katie Bell, you understand, that's great, but you're going to have to get your nutrition from other areas. That means we're going to have to try more vegetables than just the one or two that you eat.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to find replacements for, you know, for meats. Like beans are really good. I mean, she already does like almonds and edamame and stuff like that, but like everything can't be avocado, edamame and almonds, right? Yeah. So we're really going to have to try some, I'm going to try them. I love beans. Katie Bell, you don't like beans, but you know, all right, whatever. So I spend like Saturday during her karate lesson, like looking up some different recipes that we can try that we would eat because also I am not a fan of vegetarian. Like I like meats.
Yeah.
It's okay. I can cut back on my meat, but like, I gotta find something that we all will
this
eat.
This is complicating
it's
things.
It's complicating my thing.
Significantly.
And I know, like, what keeps triggering my tears is I know that I'm gonna have just finished feeding Ellis stuff that he's gonna yell about and not eat.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna have to go make food for all of the rest of us that she's not gonna eat.
Right.
And that I may not actually like all that much.
Wow.
And Stefan will eat because he'll eat anything.
Yeah.
And so, like, last night, was there like our first real like dinner? So I make roasted vegetable tacos, right? So it's just, you know, it's corn. We like corn. Mm-hmm. She likes corn. Peppers. She likes peppers.
Yep.
You know, tomatoes. She likes tomatoes. Squash, zucchini. I threw those in there, right? Those are pretty much tasteless when you roast them. They're tasteless anyway.
Yeah.
Season it up. Gonna put it in there. We're gonna have some avocado with it. And she, like, wants a bite before we ever start eating. So, like, I give her, like, a little forkful.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, I don't like it. And Stefan, like, beelines over to the couch.
Yeah.
And I'm in the den. And he gives it. I can hear him give it one of these really quiet conversations with Katie Mills. Really quiet. And I can't quite hear what's going on, but it's very intense. And then
I really love Stefan right now.
Yeah. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, we put all the food out. We're going to have our tacos, right? And Katie Bell takes a bite. And she goes, I really appreciate everything that you are doing and all that you did to make this food. It looks so good. It smells so good.
Oh, my God.
I do not like it, though.
Oh, my God.
Right? And I was just like, that's okay. We've decided that she's going to be a pescatarian so she can still eat fish sticks and shrimp.
Okay. That helps.
So, like, that helps.
Yeah.
But I just... It just has been, like, I feel like I've been on, like, a downward slope for a while with, like, things just, everything's band-aided. And the food thing, I was just like,
What? Like, what? I can't. Anyway.
What am I supposed to do?
What am I supposed to do? That's it, guys. That's where I am.
Well,
that's
but,
all.
But you can't. But you can't. Like, there's nothing for
there's
you
nothing
to do.
No.
Yeah. Which is, like, really
frustrating
hard.
For me.
Yeah. Because, like, you're doing all, and I like that you're saying, like, I'm not giving into this, like, I must feed my, you're just doing your job to provide food, and you're trying really hard. You're trying to provide things that everybody will eat, and they're not eating them.
Yeah.
That's infuriating.
It's infuriating.
Yeah. And, like, but you can't really, like, go on a cooking strike.
Right. Yeah.
So here we are.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Here we are.
I'm so sorry. You're doing such a good job.
It really is difficult. Okay.
I'll come over and eat your food.
It's delicious. The tacos, actually, that's roasted,
that
by the way.
That sounded really good.
The roasted vegetable thing was actually freaking delicious.
Yeah, sounded great.
Pickled onions on top, some sour cream.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that can lead to us feeling irritated, or at least pay back when your children make you feel irritated, the way to put that back on them to make them feel irritated all the time is forcing them to share a room. So today, we're going to talk about kids sharing rooms.
Please take a moment to remember, if you're friends of the hosts of One Bad Mother, you should assume that when we talk about other moms, we're talking about you.
If you are married to the host of One Bad Mother, we definitely are talking about you.
Nothing we say constitutes professional parenting advice.
Biz and Teresa's children are brilliant, lovely, and exceedingly extraordinary.
Nothing said on this podcast about them implies otherwise.
Teresa.
Yes.
Kids sharing rooms.
Yes.
Seems pretty normal. Seems like a thing.
That's a thing.
Teresa, did you share a room growing up?
I did. For most of growing up, I shared a room with my sister, who's 3.5 years younger than me.
Okay.
There was also, there were a couple brief moments where, because we moved around a fair amount, there were a few brief moments where I had a room to myself, never for more than like a few months. And then there was a really short time when I was like 15, where my 3-year-old brother had his bed in my room.
Wow. Yeah. Because your brother was born like way later. Then you and your sister.
Yeah.
But for the most part, were you and your sister in the same room together, like, as early as you can remember?
Yes.
Like, I mean, that was like
My first memory of our first bedroom together was, like, I can remember where my bed was and her crib was on the other side of the room.
Right, right. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, and you're the older one. So, yeah. So, for your whole life, people just been infiltrating your personal
space.
Yes,
they've been getting in the way of what I originally had, which was everything all to myself. But I don't remember any of that, so
okay. Good. I also shared a room with my sister.
Mm-hmm.
I really only remember the, like, I mean, I don't remember crib experiences anywhere. I mean, that's too young for me to remember that. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what was happening with that. We were probably in California. But I remember being in Alabama and us having two twin beds, you know, in the bedroom.
Yep.
And,
Did you always share a room?
No, we shared up until, I guess, probably when Helen Michelle, we're 4 years apart, so we're exactly like Ellis and Katie Bell are, probably right around somewhere when I was in elementary school and Helen Michelle was hitting middle school, probably around the puberty window is going to be my guess. I had my own room. I can remember being in second grade in my own bedroom.
Cool.
So, so probably up
and
until.
And then after that, you had
always
separate
had
rooms.
Our own rooms.
Okay.
So I guess my experience predominantly was separate rooms for the most part. It didn't stop there from being a lot of get out of my stuff, you know, any of that. That was still there. So did you like it? I mean, what are your memories of it?
Yeah, I think like my sister and I would fight and we, you know, it was kind of hard sharing space. Like definitely. I mean, I think that I liked it because I was, as everybody is well aware, if you've been listening to the show, I was a very fearful child, and I didn't really like being by myself. Mm. So I think I was most comfortable sharing a room with my sister. Like, it felt normal to share a room with my sister and for her to be there. But yeah, we definitely had fights, and I definitely remember it feeling like when I went off to college and, like, even sharing, I had a triple my freshman year of college, so I had two roommates. But the fact that I just had my corner of the room that was all mine,
yeah,
felt like a major upgrade from, like, because I didn't have anybody in my zone.
Did you guys share rooms through, like, high school and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
All the way.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
And, like, when I would come home from college, she would be there, and we'd still be, like, when I'd come home for breaks and stuff, we'd be sharing a room. So.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That is something I'm totally unable to relate to.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, and not, like, in a weird way, just like, yeah, I guess people do that.
One thing that was really nice was when I was in high school, my sister and I had bunk beds from maybe when I was like 10 on up through high school, we had bunk beds. And at one point in high school, when I think my sister and I must have been like really struggling, my dad did this really nice thing for me, which was that he put up a curtain for me that slid open and shut around. I was on the top bunk and it slid open and shut around my top bunk so that I could be, and I had like a little light up there for like reading or whatever. And like, I just had, it was tiny, it was my bed, but that was like my spot.
Yeah.
And I could shut the curtain if I didn't want to like see anybody or talk to anybody. And it was just really nice.
That's nice.
So that helped.
Yeah. That is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk about maybe how, and I'm sure it will be obvious, how our experiences, you know, play into what we're doing with our kids.
Yeah.
But overall, your general sense was it was a good thing to do?
Yeah. I think it was, I mean, my sister and I are very close. I'm sure it, like, helped us bond as kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, we used to have cousins over a lot, and so it was always a lot of kids in one room, and that was really fun, I think.
Nice.
I mean, definitely fights, but, like, that's how kids work things out, I think, too. Like,
yeah,
I don't think that fights are necessarily mean something is going wrong. It's like you're sorting out a lot of things about life and the way relationships work when you're doing that. So, yeah, I think it was really good for us.
So now you're a mom, and you have two kids.
Yes.
And so with that experience— You guys, tell us about Oscar and Simon and their sleeping arrangements. I mean, because, like, that just started right off the bat, right?
Yeah. Well, we had a bassinet in our bedroom when Oscar was first born.
And two and a half years? How apart are they?
2 years and 3 months apart.
2 years and 3 months apart.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that we didn't have another bedroom in our house. So for one thing, it was like just decided by a space issue. But I think, honestly, even if we did, I probably would have had them share anyway, because that was just something I wanted for them. And for myself as well. And so, yeah, from the time, like, we had the crib in there for Oscar. And then he would nap in there sometimes, even when he was a newborn. And then by the time he was 4 months, he was growing out of the bassinet.
Yeah.
I started having him sleep in there. So they've been sharing a room, like, around the clock since Oscar was 4 months and Simon was 2.5.
That is amazing to me.
Why?
We'll get into.
Yeah.
So for us, Kaybell and Ellis are 4 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, clearly has always been in her own room. And mm-hmm. we technically in the house that we are in right now, it's two bedrooms officially on paper, but there's like this weird little, you know, it's got a window.
It's like
and a closet.
Bonus room.
It's like a bonus room, but I mean, it's small. Like, you're never going to get anything bigger than the toddler bed in there, you know, and the changing table.
Yeah.
Like, that's about all you got. But the crib fit in there. And so after we moved Ellis from our room, we just moved him straight to there because, you know, he was still getting up all night. Like, I mean, again, the logic was, well, Katie Bell's just starting to kind of read at night. You know, she doesn't have a problem sleeping. Ellis is up a lot, big crier, big everything. Just feels like they'd be really disruptive to Katie Bell's sleep. So we'll just put him right there. That way we can still come and go and it won't wake up Katie Bell. And Katie Bell likes to listen to stories at night. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt like everybody sort of had these pre-done routines.
Yeah.
That felt really hard to alter.
Or like put together.
Or to put together.
Thing. Yeah.
And then,
I get that.
You know, we've always kind of talked about them sharing rooms, but like, I guess from my experience of like, why would they, you know, that seems weird that kids would share rooms because I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I did do it, I was clearly old enough to be interacting with my sister. I wasn't like a baby, you know what I mean? Where she had to watch me or there was any sort of weird, you know, weird responsibility thing. Now that they're at about the age where it feels like it would make sense to put the and he's growing out of that room. Like, he's not going to, I mean, where we are right now is he's not going to fit in that room much longer.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that would make the most sense is to put them in Katie Bell's room together and just take some stuff out of her room and put it in that room. Like make that it like a reading room and playroom kind of thing. Guys, it really is like people's walk-in closets are legitimately bigger than this room. But it's so hard for me to get my brain around because I think this is what all people who've just had a brand new baby are worried about. So I'm going to do the full list of fears right now.
Okay.
And then you're going to give us your reality.
Yeah.
That may not alleviate my fears.
Yeah.
Because I think the whole borderline truth of any and all things parenting where you're like, should we?
Yeah.
That's going to seem disruptive. As always, you just wind up fucking doing it.
Right.
And it is what it is till it isn't anymore.
Exactly.
So for us, like the fears are, their sleep schedule so different.
They're on such a different.
They are
I mean, that is
such a different.
That's
schedule.
Not a fear. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
That is going to make it really
goes
complicated.
To sleep, you know, until Ellis goes to sleep later than 6 o'clock at night, and that's like pushing it if we put him down at six.
Yeah.
That just seems. Katie Bell goes to bed like at 8:30. Nine now.
Yeah.
I mean, she's even staying up now to nine reading. Right. And so that seems weird. And he also wakes up a good like hour before Katie Bell does. Though in school. That'll change. You'll have to wake up the same time as Ellis to get us all out the door in time. So that's like one. Like, how do you make that work? Also, I have like a thing of like, well, their age difference, it's 4. I mean, we're like 2 to 3. I mean, like, we're close to like a thing where Katie Bell's going to want more privacy.
Yeah.
And I mean, that could come any day now, the whole just general, I need privacy.
Yeah.
It would be a concern if he still napped. About what we would do during the day if he was napping and Katie Bell needed to be in the room. But he doesn't nap, guys. So that's check that one off the list.
Yeah. But that's the less hard one.
Yeah.
Because, like, Oscar still naps, and it's not a problem, like, on the weekends, and it's not a problem to do something else with Simon outside of the room during an hour and a half long nap. It's not a big deal. It's more that I think the nighttime sleep schedule being so different and the nighttime wake-ups, that is the reason that you wouldn't put them together unless you kind of had to.
Right.
Like, and maybe you will decide that you have to based on, like, your space
issues.
Yeah,
no, I think we're going to have
to. You just do it. But
we did the thing this summer in Alabama where for 2 weeks they shared a room.
Uh-huh.
And it
How
worked out fine. I mean, it actually worked out.
So she just would go in later.
Yeah, she was just in. And when she went in, the lights were out.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like we could make adjustments now with, like, a little reading light on her bed where it wouldn't bother Ellis if she was still reading.
Or a flashlight. Simon uses a flashlight at night, which Oscar's always like, I want a flashlight. And I'm like, no, you can't.
Yeah, okay,
you're too young. And it's fine. He's just like, okay. Because he knows he can't.
How does this work? What about the nighttime wake-ups when one kid's asleep and the other one's not? Like, they're close enough in age that they go to bed at the same time, right?
Yeah. So I'll just start by saying, like, this was actually very hard for the first year that we did
helps.
I will just say and there were moments where I was like, I kind of regret that I did this early, but I know it's gonna keep getting better and I'm just gonna wait it out. And it did. By the time Oscar was 18 months, he and Simon were going to bed at the same time. And so ever since they've been going to bed at the same time, and they more or less get up at the same time, or one of them wakes up and the other one stays sleeping, and whoever's up comes out of the room. Whoever's still sleeping stays in the room. It's not a big deal.
Right.
The bedtime thing is a big deal because that's one of the benefits of it. Like, if they're going to bed at the same time, it's really awesome to have one room because you're doing everything together. We do the bath together, do jammies together, we go brush our teeth together, you know, we read two books in their bedroom together with them, and they go to bed together.
Right.
It's just very, and I think, like, part of my goal in getting Oscar in there early is because, like, with the two kids, I've just, like, from day one wanted them to be kind of on the same
schedule
thing. Like, it's easier for me as their parent if they're doing this, if they're up to the same thing during the day. Like, it's just easy. And there's lots of things that aren't like that yet. But as they get older, they're getting closer and closer together in terms of those things. And so, like, the bedtime thing is awesome. And I think, but up until Oscar was 18 months when they were on really different schedules, it was just, I would put Oscar down and then Simon and I would come in later. Like, I had a separate bedtime routine for Simon that happened later. And then I would bring him in and the lights were out and he just always knew he had to be quiet and we would go in. And that was still during the days where I had to sit with Simon anyway.
And it's so silly to have some of these fears sometimes because Katie Bell will sleep through a bomb, right? You know, I mean, like, Ellis is a little more sensitive, but, like, I do sit there and I think, oh, but then if I'm putting one kid, what if my, you know, like.
I mean, sometimes they do wake up.
Yeah.
That's the thing. sometimes they do, but a lot of times they don't. More right. often than not, they don't. And like, I've just gotten really used to just doing it.
Acceptance.
You just do it, and like, they pretty much don't right. ever wake up. Sometimes they do, and that's right. just like a fact of them sharing a room.
Right.
But like, the other thing was that like, even during that time where they were on different schedules and it was a little bit harder, and like, Oscar was younger, and so I was more stressed about him getting woken up or, you know, whatever. Even when that was hard, it was still helpful to me because I was often home by myself doing the bedtime routine with both of them. It was helpful to me that they were just both in the same spot because
That's
I felt
true.
Like if they were doing different things at different times, I'd have to be going in and out of like across the room, like
That's true.
Back
with
to this
age,
kid and back to that kid. Well,
That's
right,
exactly right. Because with Katie Bell, look, because they're on different schedules, when I go to put Ellis down, Katie Bell can be like on the iPad
exactly.
or reading or playing.
Or you know that she's smart
safe,
enough that she'll come get you if she needs you for something.
Right. She's not like eating marbles when I'm going to go wash.
Exactly.
Or painting on the wall or anything else.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was definitely peace of mind for me when they were really little that like I just had them in one place, you know?
So for me, I'm just like, oh, the idea of two children in one place trying to do something is just like, because my kids are really difficult to do stuff with. They want to tell me a lot of stories while I'm brushing their teeth.
I know.
All right. So maybe it's, I mean, I guess this is definitely one of those things where it just really depends on, like, I think age has a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think your personal schedule has a lot to do with it and sort of what you want. Because, I mean, like, I think you make a really good point that if eventually you want them on the same schedule and you know, or you want to end co-sleeping or you want to, you know, like have them long term in the same room. Again, like everything, you're going to have to suck it up for, you know, a couple of weeks to a year to get them all, whatever that track change is.
Yeah. Just, I mean,
I mean,
it's one of those things where, like, you just do it.
Yeah, you have to just do it. Yeah.
It's like what you said at the top of the discussion almost exactly. Like, you just, because there will be, like, issues with it. Like, it will be
so much punching.
Well, if there's more, it's more complicated. It's just more complicated. But it's, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I think so maybe the wrap up on this is this really is just a what works best for your family situation.
Totally.
And if the only thing keeping you back is fear, then you may just have to bite the bullet and like give it a shot if you would rather. Because like for me, it's like which is the thing that I want less in my life, to deal with putting them together in the same room or to deal with, you know, him always being in our room. You know what I mean? Like, whatever it is, I'd rather deal with the heart. You know, like, what's the trade-off on that? And like everything else, if it doesn't work, you can always move it back, possibly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, everything is actually fairly solvable on some way, even if it's like you said, putting up a sheet that goes between the room or the old, you know, drawing a line down the middle. It's just my side of the room.
Yeah.
This is my side of the room.
Yeah.
That's how that works. One Bed Mother is supported in part by Bumbee Box, a monthly subscription toy box curated for toddlers and preschool-age children.
You know, a lot of times when I'm picking out toys for my kids out in the world, it's so hard to tell, like, who made this? Where did it come from? What kinds of materials were used for this? And the folks at Bumbee Box seem to be super committed not only to picking things that our kids want to play with, but they really seem to care about giving us things that are really well made. They say they're 100% eco-friendly. They also really look into like the labor practices. The way they say it is, you know, they want the people who are making these items to be as well off in the world as the kids who get to play with these items.
So Bumbee Box has a special offer for One Bad Mother listeners. Go to BumbeeBox.com and enter code BADMOTHER at checkout for 10% off a new order for yourself or as a gift.
Hey, you know what it's time for? This week's Genius and Fails. This is the part of the show where we share our genius moment of the week, as well as our failures, and feel better about ourselves by hearing yours. You can share some of your own by calling 206-350-9485. That's 206-350-9485. 350-9485.
Genius fail time, Teresa. Genius me.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I saw what you did.
Oh, my God.
I'm paying attention.
Wow.
You, Mom, are a genius.
Oh, my God. That's fucking genius.
So I basically just remembered that my kids can help me with stuff sometimes. Yeah. Like, I went through a really very long extended phase of just being too tired to deal with them helping me, quote unquote, helping me with things. And and so, like, recently, though, Simon has been, like, asking to help more. And, like, at first I was, like, a little bit, like, suspicious. Like, I was like, yeah, right. You don't really want to help, you know? But or you're not going to follow through with this or whatever. But I just went with it because he was asking. And I've noticed, like, with Oscar, too, that if I can put in a little bit of energy towards this, like, it's something that they really like. And it's, like, a good skill that I'm teaching them.
Yeah.
And there are lots of little things that they are capable of doing now. So I'm trying to, like, continue on this, down this road of, like, what can you help me with right in this moment?
Right.
And it, like, keeps them from getting into trouble, too.
Well, it gives them something to do.
Yeah, it gives them a job.
Good job.
Thanks.
That's good.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. So, as I mentioned, Ellis not eating a lot.
Yeah.
So, at dinner time, right around 4:30, 4:45 is when I'm feeding him his dinner. And we're all tired because he hasn't napped. And I'm really shot by this point in time of the day. And so he's eating, and he's not eating. He's just sitting there, like, kind of poking at stuff. And I just bust out the, like, I know this is, like, there used to be an old Yo Gabba Gabba episode about there's a party in your tummy.
Yeah.
So he's never seen Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yeah.
But I bust out the, like, I actually have it recorded, guys, and I'll put it up on the Facebook group because it sounds like I'm losing my mind because I sent it to Stefan. But I'm like, hey, maybe that blueberry wants to go to a party in your tummy. Do you want to go? But then it got, like, really weird. So it'd be stuff like this. It'd be like, so he was like, yeah, that's cool. And he puts the blueberry in his mouth. I'm like, oh, my mom just went to a party without me. I'm so sad.
Yeah.
I just want to go too. Oh, I'll send you to your mommy. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, I want to go to the party. But then Ella's actually picked it up his own self. So it began, like, does he want to come to a party? Yeah, man, I totally want to go to a party. And then he, like, drinks some water and he's like, it's raining on the party. Now it's a pool party. And I'm like, who doesn't love a pool party? Let's do it. Let's go. Maybe you should try this, you know, the chicken for the pool party. But this is awful voice.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And, like, in the middle of it, I'm like, I am totally aware of all the problems.
Yes.
That I'm creating
yes.
for myself,
yes.
my child, good eating habits, all of that.
Yeah.
But he's eating, and the last 3 days since I had this slight mental breakdown, he's doing it all the time. He's like, this one's sad. It needs to go to the party and find its mommy. I was like, great.
Good job.
Oh, Jesus. We are so screwed up in my house with food right now.
Hi, One Bad Mother. I'm calling with a genius. My daughter's favorite food in the entire world is yogurt. She eats it at least twice a day. And when she doesn't get it, she screams at the top of her lungs. I picked both her and my son up at daycare and realized that there was no yogurt in the house. No children's yogurt, at least. I found that we had some non-fat, unflavored, disgusting adult Greek yogurt, and I mixed it with some strawberry jam that we had in the fridge, and voila, I made children's yogurt. That is my genius. Thank you.
It is genius.
There it is.
It is genius.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about some genius moments. Some genius moments are
just
actually
sugar.
Tiny little miracles that may not work for anyone else, that only work and exist in the, like, the existence of your house in your life. Because
I feel like that's a really broad genius moment. No, adding jam to plain yogurt?
Yes, but so okay, but here's how it would fail in my house. Here's how it would be jam. Because you hear her describing the adult, the yucky, disgusting Greek. Yeah, I mean, that's because that's what her kids say when they see it, because it doesn't look the same.
Right.
My kids would be like, because they eat it right out of the carton.
Oh.
They'd be like, that carton is not, they would be totally distrust. I mean, they would not trust me coming at them with a glass
with, like,
of yogurt or a bowl of yogurt. They'd be like, bullshit.
This isn't the yogurt.
This isn't the yogurt. Mm. Well, I'm glad things are working out.
She's not having the genius moment at you, Biz.
She is. You're doing a good job.
Yeah, good job.
Failures.
Fail. You suck.
Fail me, Teresa.
So we were coming from something else to go to Simon's swim lesson, and we were running a little bit late, and I was like prepping him, like, we're just gonna do everything so fast. Mm-hmm. We're just gonna go there really fast. We're gonna change you in the car. We're not gonna bother with the locker room. We're just gonna change you. We're gonna get in there. You might be like 2 minutes late, but it's gonna be okay. And he starts getting like super anxious, you know, like, what if we miss the whole thing? What if my teacher thinks I'm not there? What if my the whole thing? I'm like totally calming him down. You know what? It's not gonna be like that. Your teacher knows we're coming. We're only going to be like 2 minutes late. We're going to do it. It's going to be great. Mm-hmm. You're going to be totally fine. And so we get there. And like, of course, by the time we get him changed and like I get because Oscar had been napping. So I like wake him up, get him out of the car. We get all the way in there. And like Simon takes a semi-private. So there's another kid in the class. That kid didn't show. So the teacher was just like off on a break, like because neither of the kids were there. And so by the time we like got her to come out, she's kind of like, you guys are only going to have like 6 minutes left of your lesson. She's like, I want you to get your full time. But if you go to the front desk, like, I'm sure they'll work something out for you.
Right.
If, you know, there was traffic or whatever. So we go and we do that. And they give us like another like a substitute teacher for like the next class starting time.
That's nice.
Which I thought I'd like saved the day, but like Simon really loves his teacher and like part of like why the lesson is so great is he just has a really great teacher who he really loves. And this like replacement teacher, like every other like teacher we've had there has been awesome.
Sure.
So I wasn't worried, but this teacher was not awesome. Like she just was not awesome. And like she kept like kind of like talk yelling at him like the whole time. And it was just him. So she's like kind of like screaming at him the whole time.
Yeah.
And like just like not fun and like kept going like relax Simon relax, and I was just like, oh my god, you are just not a good teacher.
Yeah.
And so like by the time it was over he was just like, that was not fun.
Aww.
Like he was really good, he did his whole lesson, but he was like, that was not fun. And I just felt so bad, not just because it was my fault that he was late and missed his lesson, but that I had like reassured him like so like calmly and like clearly like it's going to be totally fine and work out great, and it just did not work out great.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Bad fail.
Yeah, that's a I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So Stefan's birthday was last week and the kids really wanted to do a bunch of stuff for him. So
happy birthday, Stefan.
Happy birthday, Stefan. So one of the they wanted to make him a cake, mm-hmm. and Stefan doesn't like cake, but we don't like a lot of cake. So I it was kind of good. Made the mini cupcakes and
nice.
Only like one small batch. We're just going to have a few cupcakes.
Yeah.
So Stefan's got a lot of travel coming up. So he was like, I was like, could you get off a little early on your birthday so that Ellis can be awake for it to give you the cupcakes.
Yeah.
We all have a cupcake together and do this together. And he's like, yes, that sounds great. I'm like, great. So me and the kids get through the whole day. We've made these cupcakes. Stefan's still not home.
Oh,
Stefan's
no.
still not home.
No.
I'm feeding Ellis. I mean, that's going a little longer.
Yeah.
Really, Ellis is waiting for these cupcakes. And I'm really having the same day I have every day these days where I'm just like, it's that what they refer to as the witching hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's my witching hour.
Mm-hmm.
That 4 till Ellis goes down is a dark, dark time for me. And it's like 4:50. And I've got to get Ellis in the bathtub. We have to move on with his nighttime. And Stefan's still not home. So I go ahead and give Ellis his cupcake.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as we get in the bath, Stefan walks in the door. And he's like, hey!
Yeah.
And Katie Bell's like, I've got cupcakes for you! And everybody's like, I get so upset. I get like so angry because now Ellis is like, more cupcakes. You know, I mean, like, I have to like.
And he's in the bath.
And he's in the bath. I mean, we've got to move on. This is that we can't.
Yeah, we
missed
it.
He's too sensitive.
Yeah.
This will fuck up the entire night.
Uh-huh.
We've got to keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also not done this thing that I have somehow worked up in my head is supposed to be this beautiful family moment of us celebrating Stefan with these fucking cupcakes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was like really a horrible person. I mean, I was like upset. I was like really upset and I was angry and I was sad. What I could not change gears.
Yeah.
And it just was gross.
Yeah.
And I apologized later.
Aww.
And here I am publicly apologizing on the podcast. But like it was bad.
I'm so sorry.
Good.
That sucks.
It sucked.
Hi, Liz and Teresa. This is a fail. I was dropping my 18-month-old son off at daycare, and as I was trying to say goodbye and give him a hug, I stepped in front of him and tripped him. He fell over the dump truck he was playing with and bumped his lip against the floor and hit his head and started bleeding and crying. And, you know, probably to an outsider, it looked like I tripped him on purpose, but it was early in the morning, and I couldn't think through what I was doing, and I just wanted to give my son a hug goodbye. And instead, I made him bleed and cry and need ice. Thanks for the show.
It's the loving ones that turn into fails that are just the worst.
Yep.
They're just like, I just wanted
to say goodbye. Also, that it was like at drop-off is like the worst possible time.
Yeah. Everybody is watching.
Yeah. But it's also like sometimes it's hard to say goodbye. Like, it's hard to leave. But then if your kid gets hurt, then it's like, okay, now I'm going to be here for another 20 minutes. You know?
Yeah. There's nothing good about drop-offs ever.
No.
Ever. Well, you're doing a horrible job showing love to your child publicly.
Try not to trip him next time.
Yeah. Could you
see if that works better?
You are the greatest mom I've ever known. I love you, I love you. When I have a problem, I call you on the phone. I love you, I love you.
One Bad Mother is supported in part by Care.com, the world's largest digital marketplace for finding and managing family care.
I don't think I have gotten a single caregiver for my children that I did not get offline. I find the system incredibly easy. They provide the background checks. They provide the screening. It's a really simple process for me to put in what I'm looking for and to sort of streamline the process of people who are actually interested in babysitting. It's all there in one place, and it makes it incredibly easy. And I have legitimately not had a single bad experience with a sitter from using this online service.
So Biz and I both have premium memberships with Care.com. You guys should get one too. One Bad Mother listeners can save 30% off a Care.com premium membership and receive a $15 credit that you can use towards paying your caregiver when you use Care.com's convenient payment platform. Just visit care.com/badmother when you subscribe.
Teresa.
Yes.
Let's call a parent.
Okay.
But we have to use our library voices when we do it.
Okay.
This week, I should just continue by saying I'm awful at using a library voice.
Shocker.
Always that kid. This week, we are talking to Gwen Glazer, the recommendations librarian from the New York City Public Library and co-host of the podcast The Librarian Is In. Welcome, Gwen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Well, before we get into all things library, which is pretty exciting, let's start off by asking you what we ask all our guests, which is, who lives in your house?
So I live in my house. I live in my house with my husband and my newly minted 2-year-old, who just turned 2 a little while ago. And we have a dog named Moose and a cockatiel named Ty, who hates me.
What is a cockatiel? Is that a bird?
It's a parrot.
It's a parrot.
Yes, a small parrot.
We had a
small,
cockatiel.
Angry parrot.
We had one growing up. Really? Yeah, we had one. Yeah, they live forever. They live.
I mean,
it was totally like a spontaneous, like, surprise purchase. Like, my dad just, like, bought it at
just
the pet store
out.
On the way home. No, he bought it. He bought it with us, with the kids. And we came home and, like, surprised my mom with
surprise
this bird.
Surprise mom.
Yeah, that's going to, like, live forever.
Oh,
that's going to, like, outlive all of us.
Did
yeah.
you want something
surprise
else
for
to
the
love?
Next 30
yeah.
years.
Yeah, yeah, surprise. That's yeah. right. Tell us about what the recommendations librarian does. I have a guess, but I would love to hear it from you. I don't want to make horrible sweeping assumptions that you just get to sit around and read books all day. What is your job? And yeah, let's start with that.
So yes. Well, first of all, thank you for not making that assumption, because a lot of people, the first thing that they say when they hear you're a librarian is like, oh my God, it must be so cool to sit around and read books all day. And you're like, yeah, that's totally not what we do.
It's sort of like the mom question. Oh, you're a mom. That must be great. You just get to play all day.
Yeah.
Right. You must just like put your feet up and watch your cute kids do cute stuff all day. Yeah, no, not exactly. However, my job is really cool and really focused on books, which is a lot of fun. I do pretty much what it sounds like. I make book recommendations in lots of different forms. I'm part of the reader services department here at NYPL, which has two people in it. I'm half of it, and it's still relatively new. So we write lots of blog posts making book recommendations that anybody can read. We do personalized recommendations on Twitter and with an email form. And we also, another big part of our job is to sort of help librarians at NYPL kind of raise their level of expertise and kind of teach the public that librarians are experts that you can go to ask about books. And so we do lots of training, and it's this part of librarianship called Reader's Advisory, which is basically just talking about books that people might want to read.
That's awesome. That's really awesome, in fact, a really awesome job. That sounds super awesome. So as a recommendations librarian, I guess one of my first things is that like a superpower that you have to have where you're like, I can tell, or is it more like a parlor trick where it's like you're clearly looking for love because you don't have a ring on your finger? Is it
right.
Is it more, how do you do this job without it falling into some sort of weird reading profiling?
That's a good question. So there is kind of a parlor trick, which comes from this librarian named Nancy Pearl, who is the closest thing that we librarians have to a superhero. She actually has an action figure that was produced a couple years ago, which is incredible. And she has created this sort of rubric that we use that it basically, my friends actually call it a librarian party trick and ask me to do it sometimes. So what it is that, well, actually, I could do it with you. Do you want to do it right now?
All right. Yes, sure. Okay, good. Because I have nothing to read, and I can tell you. You tell me what you need from me, and I will tell you. Okay.
Okay, great. So tell me about a book that you like. It doesn't have to be your favorite book. It doesn't have to be like the best book you ever read. Just tell me about a book that you like.
Okay. I like, one of my favorite books is Robert Crace's first detective novel from the Elvis Cole series. It's called The Monkey's Raincoat, and I love it. It's smartly written. I also like things with detectives who are sort of like private detectives who also go around punching people who deserve it for justice. I enjoy that. Mm-hmm. He's got sort of the silent, strong partner. He himself is very witty, and it's just it moves quickly. It is enjoyable, and I enjoy smartly written punching books, and it is one of my favorites.
Okay, great. So the way the parlor trick works is that you do not actually need to know the book that you are talking about, and this was a perfect example because I have never heard of that book before, but what you're really listening to is the way that the person describes it. So what you said was it was well written, and you said you talked a lot about the characters, and you talked a lot about the pacing. And so then when you're trying to think of books to recommend to you, you match up the attributes. So like Nancy Pearl calls them doorways and says that like every book you can enter through a bunch of different doorways. There's character, setting, language, story, and then sometimes art. Mm-hmm. And so every book has elements of all of those things, but most of them have more of one than the others. And so listening to you talk, I'm going to say that character and plot are both important to you, but also stuff that's really well written is important to you. You didn't talk at all about the setting. Like, you didn't mention anything about where it takes place. So I would never give you some book that was like, oh, the misty fields of England, like being like the most important thing about it.
Right. Fair enough.
So that's how it would start. And then if you actually want me to do it, another secret, I don't know if it's a secret, it shouldn't be, but we do use all kinds of different tools, including like databases. We use Google, we use all sorts of stuff in order to find good recommendations. So I have one off the top of my head for you, which is Kate Atkinson. Have you ever read anything by her?
I have not.
So she is a detective novelist who writes the Jackson Brody series is totally fantastic. The first one is Case Histories. They're beautifully written. And the detective does punch people.
Yay.
And they're quickly paced, but they're also like very literary.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah. So I can keep going if you want to, but that might be enough.
No, that's good. That's good. Now that's fair. That's fair. This is not my own personal psychic reading here. It's okay. But that's very exciting. What that shows me is that leads me like sort of into a question I was going to ask later, but I'm going to do it right now, which is, so many of our listeners are parents, not all, but a lot of them are listeners or people who are just really busy. And it's very hard to find the time to find new books, either literally brand new books that have just, you know, been written, or even just books that have been around a while that we may not know about. You can't just go to a library and like cruise around with your 2-year-old in, you know, mm-hmm. the fiction section, or even mm-hmm. go to the computer and type mm-hmm. in an author. I have found is very difficult. Mm-hmm. So I think having this, I would never have thought about a recommendations librarian. I mean, it seems like such a helpful tool. How can we as people who want to be reading and knowing about new books and or even series that we may not have read before best use the library?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a couple answers. One is that everybody can get a hold of us pretty easily, whether or not you're a New Yorker, whether you use our library or not, both through Twitter and also through the email-based form that we have. So I don't know how self-promotional I can be. Can I actually like?
Yeah,
say
no. Tell us about the email.
How you do it?
Yeah, I saw this. This was really clever.
Okay, cool. So all you do is you go to nypl.org/ask, and you scroll down to the thing that says "What should I read next?" and you click on it, and then you just fill out this thing. That's basically the game that I just played with you, actually.
Yeah.
And then we will respond to you via email, just a personalized email. Nobody can see it. It's totally private and between us. So if people like stuff that for whatever reason they are embarrassed about, even though nobody should be embarrassed of what they're reading. But if they're embarrassed, it doesn't matter. It's just between the two of us. We'll never tell anybody. And we'll make some personalized recommendations just based on what you like. And then the Twitter, we call it open office hours, where Fridays, unfortunately for you guys, it would be really early in the morning, but Eastern Standard Time, from 10 to 11 in the morning every Friday, we're on Twitter and we're just tweeting back and forth with people who are saying like, oh, I really loved Harry Potter. What should I read next? And anybody can do that regardless of whether they live here. It doesn't matter. And so we totally love doing that. It's our bread and butter and it's like our favorite thing. So that's one thing. But the other thing is that you can always go up to any librarian and just ask for book recommendations. Like this is a thing that we actually learn in library school, how to do reader's advisory, how to talk to people about books. And they'll ask you a couple questions about what you like. I totally think that you could do it with a kid hanging off of you or sitting on your shoulders or whatever for like 20 seconds. But even if you don't have the 20 seconds and you aren't able to talk to somebody at your library, the other thing that I know I did, especially when my son was an infant, is I went crazy with the hold list.
Oh, yeah.
So every library system now that has a website, if you can just go and look at what you want online during nap time or after bedtime or whatever, and then give the library, you know, enough time to like get the book in, you're basically just putting it on hold for yourself and ordering it for yourself. And you can just go grab it off the shelf, check out and leave.
I am a huge library lover, but the truth of my history with libraries is I was a big library lover as a kid. So a lot of what shapes my views of going to the library is from like, you know, up until I was 12, right? Mm-hmm. Roughly when my mom would take us to the library. And then there's this like huge sweeping gap until I had kids that I started mm-hmm. going yep. back to the library. And it was the story time that kind of got me back in. But library etiquette. I would like you to talk a little bit about that because I have like really loud kids. And even though there's a whole cornered off section for kids, it's still in the library.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We are loud. Right. Shh, Ellis, shh, Ellis, shh, 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 shh. Right. So welcome us to the library, Gwen. Get us into the library.
Welcome to the library. Okay. Well, so first I feel like I have to do a disclaimer that says that all libraries are different.
Yes.
And you can't always speak for every library. But I would say that very generally, the culture of shushing at libraries, I think, is really going away, which I think is awesome. I think that people, like, used to look at libraries as this place where you just had to shut up. And, like, it's really not true anymore. I really think that libraries love to be seen as vibrant places where, of course, kids are welcome. Like, so much of our bread and butter programming is about children. And so much of our purchasing books is about children. Mm-hmm. Like it's a very child focused place. So I feel like if you were in the designated kids area, like does your library have an actual place where there's toys and books and stuff where kids are supposed to play?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Kids are allowed to be, yeah. Like That's great. I mean, some really tiny libraries probably don't have that, and that's a totally different story. But if your library has a designated place for children, I feel like it is okay for them to talk in their normal voices there. Like, not screaming their heads off, sure, but
inside
like
voices.
Actual talking and normal interaction, totally fine. Totally fine. And especially like during a story time. And I mean, I think, again, this is the kind of thing where you want to ask the librarian who's running the story time, or you want to talk to the staff member who's sort of around and just say, like, you can always ask and just say, if anything, you know, if my kid is doing anything, like, just let me know. But like story times, nobody expects a, you know, 1 to 2 year old story time to have every child sitting very still with their legs crossed and like looking straight ahead. Like, everybody knows that's totally unrealistic.
What are things that libraries are doing now for us as well?
Yeah, okay. I love this question. So it has, I feel like it has a lot of the stuff that you remember as a kid that you grew up with. There's story times that can be really traditional that are librarians reading books to kids. And that's great. That's total bread and butter. That's exactly what we're all about. There's also just this world out there of other kinds of classes, a lot of which, honestly, parents can't take advantage of when their children are really little. But one other sort of like pro tip that I always think to that I want new parents to know about is downloadable ebooks. Mm. So that if you're in that really early infant stage where you absolutely can't get out of the house, like the number of ebooks that your library probably has available for you to download onto your phone or your iPad right now is totally astonishing. And that I feel like is a very 2016 thing about libraries that like it's been sort of kicking around for a while, but I think in the last couple of years, we've all really started to figure it out. There's a system called Overdrive that sells a lot of ebook packages to libraries, and that a lot of public libraries all over the country have it. It's super easy to use, and it's so amazing. Like when I know when my son was first born, and you know, I would be in like hour 4 in the middle of the night nursing him on the couch. Like I was downloading ebooks onto my phone so that I could read them and like give myself carpal tunnel.
But there's also like there's video rentals. You can rent videos and DVDs.
I wasn't
but you can
say
also
anything.
Rent videos because it's a library. There's DVDs.
If you have a VCR,
which some
hands
people
up if you have
may,
a VCR. It's possible.
Oh my God.
You know, you can get some 8 tracks for listening to it. No. But there's also like audiobooks, which is a big deal. And I remember like my big discovery at our library that I just never thought about. Katie Bell had gotten into like listening to stories going to bed. Like, you know, we happen to have the Frances series on CD, stuff like that. But like the library has a ton of, you know, books on tape basically for kids. You know, I remember sitting there listening to records and flipping, you know, the book along with the tape or the record or the CD, and that's there. And my particular favorite thing in the kids' library is computers. I don't want my kids on my computers. I mean, we, you know, or laptops or whatever we have at home, but there are some computers in there that they are free to bang on and learn how to use the mouse and learn how to like navigate stuff in a way that I was not ready to do in my house. Which is
right, totally. And a lot of times those computers also have like specially curated games and stuff on them. Like librarians have picked out the stuff that they think is good and appropriate and interesting for kids that age to use, and they're just right there.
Yeah.
So, like, that's saving us all tons of work in trying to figure out what apps and whatever are okay for kids.
So basically you're totally saying we should not be afraid of the library and we should not be afraid of librarians, no matter what
Definitely
our childhood experience was.
Right, right.
Well, let's wrap up on some recommendations. Let's get you going in what you are actually your experience, your expertise, as it were. We're going to ask for a couple of recommendations on a couple of different types of books. Let's talk about ourselves first before we ask about our children, because that's what's important. We don't know what's going on in the world, most of us, anymore, in terms of like new good books that we should be reading. Is there anything out right now that that you really love?
Yeah. So short answer, yes.
Yeah.
More specific answer is I was thinking about this and thinking like, okay, if you have a very little bit of time to read, what's a really great thing that's also kind of like trendy right now? And my answer, I think, is graphic novels. Mm. There's so much cool stuff happening right now with graphic novels, which are, you know, comic books, manga, all that kind of stuff, that's targeted to adults and sometimes to young adults and sometimes to kids. And there's just kind of a renaissance in it right now. It's really exciting. There's a lot of feminist stuff out there. And so a couple of the of the specific ones I thought of for your listeners in particular, one of them is that Spider Woman, like old school, old fashioned Spider Woman, has a new plot line where she's pregnant.
What?
Which is, right? Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
And the drawings, yeah, it just came out this summer. The drawings are super cool. And so I thought about that. I also thought about, there's two called Lumberjanes, which is totally appropriate for kids. It's this awesome feminist comic that you can read with your kids. It's about these girls at summer camp.
I saw this at a Comic-Con that I was at, but I didn't have a chance to look at it too much. It's slightly older. Like, I didn't think it was quite right for Katie Bell at seven, but you're saying it's, but I also didn't read it. So it was beautiful.
Seven might be a touch young. I would say like 9 or 10 probably. It is so good. It is so good. Like, to the point that my colleague in Reader Services and I are always like, where was this when we were kids? And we're also both rushing to get the new ones, like, as adult moms who can't wait to get our hands on them.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so that's great. Also, Paper Girls is another really cool one. That's for either older teens or adults, for us. That's another really cool feminist comic that's just come out. And another one is called Dr. Fate, which is also great. It's about a medical student trying to save the world. And so all of those, they're really visual. They're really fun. It's not going to drag you down. Mm. And they're perfect. Graphic novels are perfect to check out of libraries because they can be really expensive to buy. And they also are really fast to read. It's only going to take you, 45 minutes or an hour to get through one of them. So you won't have to pay late fees. Like, you'll be super good with them.
All right. Well, now let's move on to helping our children become readers as well. Let's start off with chapter books. So what do you recommend to some good chapter books and what age to kind of start reading those?
So it's always a little bit hard to generalize because kids can be so different
That's
with
true.
Where they are in reading. However, that said, we can generalize. And I think probably like 6, 7, 8 is probably what, and you're talking about chapter books to read aloud, right?
Yeah, to read aloud, like as a family together reading. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I would say very generally 6 or 7 is a great age to start. Although it's actually funny that you asked this question because I just started thinking about it with my 2-year-old. I was like, well, surely he's old enough to get past some of these picture books now.
I know. Well, that's just it. I think for a lot of us, there's that urge to do that. But like Katie Bell and Stefan just got through reading a chapter book from start to finish. And, she's just turning 7. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But he has come out of the room saying, I feel like we're there. Mm-hmm. Like, she's able to retain. But then I'll go in and pick up a chapter book with her, and she's like, turn the page. Like, she doesn't say, I'm like, have I picked up the wrong book? What is it? Mm-hmm. So what's a good chapter book that I can bring to her and be as cool as Stefan? Because it's a competition. So what do you recommend for a chapter book?
That's an awesome question. So have you heard of Kate DiCamillo?
No.
She is a children's book author. She wrote a book called Flora and Ulysses about a squirrel and a vacuum cleaner that got a lot of publicity recently. And all of her books are really fun and really good for that age. I also think Roald Dahl writes some really nice short chapter books that would be really good. And also Beverly Cleary, it's funny because there's sort of this thing where in our reader services department that we talk about a lot, which is that people often feel like they want to give their kids classics and they want them to read the classics and fine literature. And that's kind of not where we are often. I think that there's a lot of really good stuff out there that's really fun once you can find it. But on the other hand, as a parent, you want to keep your own sanity, right? And like, that's a lesson that we all learn with picture books, that like reading the same book over and over and over again 8 million times, if you get sick of it and can't stand it anymore, like, that is not an enjoyable experience
right.
for you.
Right.
And you don't want to do it anymore. And I think that that's true with chapter books too. So I think some of the ones that some of us might remember from our own childhoods, like for me, Beverly Cleary was a huge thing. So like Ramona Quimby, age 8, I actually recently reread that for Beverly Cleary's 100th birthday, and it's still amazing. Like, it's still absolutely wonderful. And I think that or Super Fudge would both be great first chapter books to start with. And I also think Brian Selznick is another author who I think is great to read aloud and great for the sort of like younger set of kids.
Oh, that's good. All right, well, let's wrap up on one more set of recommendations. We sort of were getting a couple of requests in terms of recommendations that kind of fall into almost two genres, but I think they're both sort of equally important genres. And one is we had a lot of parents who work who were like, oh my God, are there any books to read to my toddler to help him understand why mom and dad have to go to work every day. And I was like, oh my God, that is so true. 90% of the books are just like, mom's at home and kids playing outside, or dad's at home and you're going fishing. Do you have a recommendation for a book like that?
Yes. So I actually came up with a whole bunch, and I think that I'm going to write a blog post about this just to put them all in one place.
Oh, that'd be great.
Because this is a really great question. But there's a couple that I found that I think are perfect. One is called When Mama Gets Home by Marisa Bina Russo, which is also about sharing a parent's attention with your siblings. and then there is one called When Mama Goes to Work by Marsha Skyrpuch, that just features lots of different kinds of working moms and tons of diversity. And I feel like both of those are great because there's so many books about separation anxiety generally, but those specifically deal with moms who are going to work.
Oh, that's great. And then the other one is, any books to that you would recommend just on helping our kids better understand the beautiful, diverse world that we live in?
Yes, definitely. This is something that we also have been thinking about a ton. And we actually just wrote a list for a website called Mommy Poppins. That's called 12 Books to Help Talk About Race and Activism with Your Kids. So if you Google that, you can find it and find the 12 that are sort of divided up by age. But the one that I love and that I read to my son all the time is called It's Okay to Be Different by Todd Parr. You know that book?
No.
It's so Todd Parr writes these like really basic, lovely children's books with these sort of heavy line drawings and really bright colors. And It's Okay to Be Different is just this like, it's okay. And it actually, I thought of this book because it has a working mom in it too, which is awesome because it doesn't really talk about it. It's just like, you know, I love you when you're away. I love you when you're here. And Todd, that's the I Love You book by Todd Parr. It's Okay to Be Different is very much about race and about different, you know, it's okay to be a different color. It's okay to be all different sizes. It's okay to have all of these different, and like, it's not sort of slamming your kid over the head with it, but it's sort of expressing those kind of really simple messages in the way that you really want to get them across to a younger kid. And once you get to elementary school, there's a couple other really great ones. Spike Lee wrote a book called Giant Steps to Change the World. That's wonderful. There's a book for kids in middle school called The Road to Paris by Nikki Grimes, which is actually fiction. And it's about a biracial girl who moves in with a new foster family. And then there's a ton of young adult stuff for like teenagers and high schoolers about this. There's even a Black Lives Matter picture or picture book, a Black Lives Matter nonfiction book that's super readable, that's all about the social movement that's coming up and everything. So I think that, yeah, I think books are a great place to go when you don't know how to have those conversations with your kids. And I'm really happy to be able to write stuff like that can hopefully help some people.
That's great. Well, we'll try and get that list as well. And we'll link that up with the show notes this week so people can access that list from the Mommy Poppins website that you guys pulled together, as well as we'll link people up to the New York Public Library website where guys, they do have this blog that is just recommendations. We'll make sure that everybody's connected to that. And Gwen, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us about this. I really do think that people sometimes just forget the library is there and the resource that it can be because we get really busy. I feel the same way about, like, I always ignore my Parks and Rec, like the public parks and like all the stuff they offer, because you just aren't playing in it before you have kids. And then you're like, oh, I forgot. There's like movies in the summer and games and camps and like it's all kind of affordable. And the library, you guys have heard me talk about it before, is the most affordable because, you know, it's pretty much all free, which is amazing. So again, thank you for joining us and making the recommendations, and we'll make sure that everybody has access to all of your work.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Brainwaves send a message, pick up the phone. When you I call.
The three of you enter a cave of a big red dragon and is standing over a hoard of precious golden rubies. And he says, what do you do, adventurers? I'm a dragon man.
I cast fire on him. It's very good.
I address the red dragon and say, us, we're the hosts of The Adventure Zone, a podcast about family playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Very good synergy. Commit to the bit.
I roll to charm new listeners. It is very effective against all odds.
Everybody, we're the McRoys. We host the Adventure Zone. It's a podcast where we play Dungeons & Dragons together. It's a comedy podcast. We don't take the rules too seriously because there's a lot of them and we did not take the time to learn them. Maybe listen to us. We come out every other Thursday on the Maximum Fun Network. You can find us on iTunes or on MaximumFun.org. I think this promo is a critical hit.
That was fun.
She's doing a great job.
She is doing a great job. Yeah. And she clearly is very good at her job.
Yeah.
Which I always appreciate.
Yeah.
And guys, when I was doing some research to prepare for the interview, that I was like, why would I not go to the New York Public Library website?
Yeah.
Just because I don't live in New York. That's why.
Yeah.
And that's dumb.
Yeah.
Like, there are just so many recommendations, and the idea of being able to, like, if you're scared of your own librarian at your library, mm-hmm. you may email or tweet to Gwen in the New York Public Library.
Or just overcome that fear.
Yeah, true.
Show up with a torn book and see what happens, and that will be the true
test. That's the true test. That's right. Well, and show up with the right attitude.
Right.
As in everything.
I'm here to own up for this.
That's right. This one's on me. But I'm coming in super pleasant, not on the defensive for being the one who ruined your stuff. I thought it was great. You know what's also great that I think is great?
What's that?
Listening to a mom have a breakdown.
Oh, yeah.
I need it. Let's listen to a mom have a breakdown.
Hi, guys. This is a rant. So I know it's developmentally appropriate and even expected and what you want it to be, but every single word out of my 3-year-old mouth. Why is this? Why is that? What is that? What is this? And since he has discovered the how do you spell blank, he just doesn't have a... It's just all the time. From the moment he wakes up until the moment sleep. I cannot answer. And now I've resorted to I don't know. And heaven forbid I don't know the answer to the question, because then he just asks it again, thinking that maybe I just don't want to answer. So now I've given him the I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. I do not know, I do not know. Please do not ask me that question again. And then he follows up with the next question. Thank you, guys. Bye.
That is such a, like, pre-kid thing where I was like, I will answer any question.
Yeah. What's the big deal?
Ever asks.
Yeah, what's the big deal? They're just trying to learn more about the world.
You are their teacher.
Yeah.
Make the time.
Yeah.
I've got
answers. I can explain this really well.
I will take the patience and time, and I know my child will then want to sit patiently and listen to the answer.
Yeah, right. That's the other side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's this? What's that? What's this? I'm trying to answer. Yeah. Do you want to hear the answer to the question that you asked?
Yep.
It just sucks. I didn't want to, like, make fun of it. It just sucks. It sucks because you want to do it. Like, your brain is telling you, I want, part of my job is to answer these questions.
Yeah.
I want to be the parent who answers these questions.
Yeah.
Like, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
But, like, your day doesn't allow you to always be the best parent you can be, or like, or even the best person that you can be. And so those questions really, it's like a trap. They trap you into, like, you know, this, like, unsolvable position of, I don't have time to answer all these questions.
Well,
and even if I do, you're not listening.
Well, yeah. But, and also that feeling, like, I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
Like, it makes you feel so deficient, which makes you feel so much worse.
Yes.
And makes, like, every question, like, kind of like an attack almost.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to answer this for me, are you?
Here's a question. Oh, wait, it's not a question. It's a reminder that you're totally unable to do this thing that you want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's it. It really is awful.
It's so hard.
It's. That's the worst. Pull my hair out. Well, you are doing a good job.
Yeah, you are.
You are.
Yeah.
Teresa, what did we learn today? Okay. We have learned that putting your kids in the same room, either from birth or later in life or not at all, is just a perfect example of all things parenting where you're just trying to do what works for you. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about what anybody else is doing.
Yeah.
Also, their experience is not going to be whatever your experience was in a room as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I know that, like, my hesitation to put the kids in the same room is because of either my experience or not having shared the room.
Yeah.
You know, like, both of those play into it.
Yeah.
So it's going to be what it's going to be. And again, like all things parenting, it's going to take a while to get it to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So just, you know, saddle up, get your patience hat on, decide this is the thing that you're going to be patient about, and then throw everything else under the bus and figure out what works for you guys. And if it doesn't work, figure out something else. What else did we learn? We learned that libraries are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And we learned that we can actually get help finding books for everything.
This is a big one.
This was a big one.
Yeah.
We took a little time in that interview, but I feel like that was important.
I got a lot of information out of that.
I did. That was like really helpful and comforting.
Yes.
And I cannot emphasize enough the number of times I have surprised myself with how much the library can help us when we are having tough questions that we have to answer.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually a resource.
Yes.
You know, that is where all those parenting books are, too. You're going to, you know, you want to go and, you know, find some of the parenting books that are out there that you want to explore. Go look in your library. You don't even have to check it out. Just pick it up and scroll through
it. Is this for me?
Yeah.
Yes, no, yes,
great.
No.
Yeah, yes, no, yes, no. No one's in the parenting section with you. Go take a look. You don't have to be embarrassed about what you're looking at, right?
Yeah.
It's great resources for the lighter topics that we need help talking to our kids about and the heavier ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, ta-da. Libraries.
Bam.
Boom. Awesome. Additionally, things that are awesome is we have two meetups happening in the world of One Bad Mother. The first one is on July 23rd. The Boston One Bad Mother group will be getting together from 10 to 1 at the Alexander Kemp Playground in Cambridge. More information is available on the Boston One Bad Mother group page. That's Boston OBM. Search for that in Facebook. Additionally, the OBM Seattle is planning a karaoke night on Friday, August 5th. That's always a good time. This may be their second karaoke night. So again, karaoke on Friday, August 5th at the Crescent Lounge. Just go and join the OBM Seattle group on Facebook if you would like more details. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
Somebody should plan a meetup at a library.
Ooh.
I know. Wouldn't that be awesome? As always, you can check us out on Facebook on our public or private page. As clearly mentioned here, there are also a ton of One Bad Mother sort of subgroups that have popped up. So, you know, search for One Bad Mother in your local community on Facebook. You might find one. So we encourage you to do that. You can join us on Twitter at One Bad Mothers or at Teresa Thorne or at Biz Ellis.
You can share a personal or commercial message on the show. Just go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. You can also get a weekly affirmation from us. We'll tell you what a good job you're doing. And we'll give you a link to the new show that week.
And as always, you can join us over on iTunes, write a nice review, click on some stars. That somehow helps.
It does help. We're pretty sure that helps.
We're pretty sure that helps.
A lot. So please do that.
So do that.
If you haven't done that, that would be great.
It's like our equivalent of street cred.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, this must be a legitimate podcast because they've got X number of stars and or reviews.
Yes. And you can also tell a friend about the show.
Well, that's nice.
Or share an episode that you like.
That's enjoyable.
With friends.
Yeah. Everybody, you are doing a good job. This is hard. No one cares. But that doesn't prevent us from getting up and doing it all over again, day after day. And yeah, that's it. I don't know. I'm having a hard time, guys. So that's the best I can offer is it is hard. And you're all doing great.
You're doing a really good job, Biz.
Thank you. I'm functioning. It sucks because there are times where I'm like, I legitimately don't feel like I am.
Yeah.
Though I know overall, grand picture, it's going to work itself out and it's going to be good. So I just, you know, we come on the show at the end and we tell everybody you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
But we also understand that that's sometimes hard to hear.
Yeah.
And that it's sometimes hard to believe. But we're going to keep saying it because you are. And it does help sometimes when you're feeling like you aren't, to hear it. So well, thank you.
You're welcome. And I think also sometimes when we're having the hardest time, that is actually when we're doing the best job that we've done. Like, that is actually when we're being challenged the most.
Right.
And it's the hardest. When things are going swimmingly, that's kind of easy. You know what I mean? Like, not that we're not doing a good job when things are going great. But, like, when things are really hard, you really are doing it. You're getting really good at this.
Oh, so good. I'm going to, like, have a master's degree in parenting by the time this is done.
You probably already do.
I've got a lot. I went to
Here's
a lot of
one
gun.
Right here.
Thanks.
There you go.
My parenting PhD, which again sounds like some ridiculous 1980s poster
it
and
does.
I'm drinking coffee
in
like a Minnie Mouse shirt.
Yep.
I don't do Mondays, guys. Teresa, you are also doing an incredibly good job.
Thank you, Biz.
And we will talk to you guys next week.
Bye. Bye.
I got to low down mama blues. I got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. You know that right.
We'd like to thank Max Fun, Lindsay Pavlis, our engineer, our husbands Stefan Lawrence and Jesse Thorne, our perfect children who provide us with inspiration to say all these horrible things, and of course, you are listening. To find out more about the songs you heard on today's podcast and more about the show, please go to MaximumFun.org.
One Bad Mother is a member of the Maximum Fun family of podcasts. To support the show, visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
Do you have a genius or fail moment you'd like to share on the show? Then leave us a message at 206-350-9485. Full-on rage-induced rants are also welcome.
Well, Daddy may be fussing by, not throw down mama blue. Oh, said Daddy may be fussing by, not throw down mama blue.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.